When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's the fight in. Clock.
Oh, that was really interesting, mate. Yeah.
Welcome, listeners, to the second special World Cup episode of The Extra Inch. I'm Windy, and I'm joined by our tactics guy, Nathan A. Clark, to talk about England and the first round of group games in general. Hello, Nathan.
Hi, mate. How's it going?
I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm very good. I'm feeling the football's coming home, mate.
Yes, it is definitely coming home. Or, I mean, after the first round of games, we can say it's 99% coming home.
I think that's fair.
But first, you wanted to talk briefly about the Spurs transfer news. The window's obviously open. There's nothing really happening so far in terms of incomings, but there are a few mumblings, so let's get your take on those. So starting off with Wilmar Barrios from Boca Juniors, who's the Colombian central midfielder. What do you know about him?
So I've been trying to catch some footage of him. He's very raw. He's very much a defensive midfielder. I can't remember what his stats were. I looked them up earlier, but he's a very, very proactive defensive midfielder. I think he's been called the Colombian Casemiro and the Colombian Kante, but the comparison I would make, which is easy for Spurs fans, is I would compare him to Sandro Ranieri in that he's super aggressive and not a very tidy defensive midfielder. He's sort of chaotic, which is fun. But I think that if we're looking at him, that suggests that we're likely to be looking at moving on one of Dier or Wanyama for whatever reason. The only alternative idea is that maybe Dier is seen exclusively as a centre-back now, and therefore we need a second defensive midfielder.
I had been wondering that myself. I thought perhaps with the transfer of De Ligt seeming to fall through for whatever reason, probably asking price, maybe Dier moving to centre-back is their alternative. And so could Barrios being targeted be as a result of that? Having seen, like you say, a few highlight reels, obviously I've not seen much of him. In fact, I don't think I've ever seen him play. I'm looking forward to seeing him play for Colombia. But having done some research on YouTube, he seems much more in the Wanyama style than the Dier style. He doesn't seem like a player who naturally drops into the back, between the back two, to make a back three. More that he's actually, if anything, more aggressive than Wanyama and pressing high up the pitch, and seems to be quite composed on the ball. He seems to be more natural in possession than Wanyama to me. Were they your thoughts as well?
Pretty much. That's pretty much where I was.
Another player that's been linked once again is Andre Gomez of Barcelona. I think this is probably 18 months now of him being linked with us, so that sort of implies to me that there's some interest. What do you know about him?
He is a player who is deemed very frustrating by a lot of fans. Most stats guys dislike him because statistically he looks very poor. But to try and put a positive spin on it, he reminds me very much of Dembele in the sort of late AVB Tim Sherwood era, where he frustrated Spurs fans a lot because he had a lot of the ability, but he was incredibly negative with how he used the ball. And he would receive the ball, wait to take on a man, and then turn around and pass it sideways or backwards. That's sort of where Andre Gomez is now. So if you look at that similarity, you might be very optimistic and say, well, then he can therefore turn Andre Gomes into Moussa Dembele as he has done before with Moussa Dembele. I am not totally confident that that's possible, but maybe.
He seems very much to be a player with a lot of rough edges to smooth out. And with the way Spurs are now, can we really be afford to be taking chances on so many rough diamonds? I don't know. And at 24, is there enough time for those to be smoothed out in time for him to become a decent first team option? Interesting one though, because I mean, he's someone who's been linked time and time again over the past few years, and when those links keep cropping up, it does tend to imply that there's some genuine interest there. So watch this space. The third one is Ndombele, who I know you're a big fan of, who is the Lyon midfielder, currently on loan from Amiens, but I believe there is a 10 million euro fee pre-agreed between the two clubs, which Lyon would be crazy not to take up, because you know he's moved well beyond that price bracket now. You're a big fan, right, Nathan, of Ndombele?
I mean, yeah, he's got the name and everything. He's ready to be Dembele. It's all there. He's maybe a less safe, more aggressive. He's got more to his passing game. Yeah, the only complication, as you say, is that he's on this sort of pre-loan before you buy deal to Lyon.
But he fits nicely into the Spurs model. Okay, well, let's move on and talk about England, because there's a lot to talk about. The game was actually a lot of fun, I thought. So this is the morning after the Tunisia match. We won 2-1. Harry Kane scored twice. Harry Kane, our Lord and Saviour, I should say. What a man. There was a lot of positive aspects of that performance for England. What did you think went well in the match?
The early start and creating a ton of quality chances early on, but then of course failing to score more than one from them. I guess we sort of knew that was coming, and the really impressive bit is that we continued and we stuck at it when it got hard. And when we've seen England capitulate so many times, and I put England Iceland as sort of in my top two biggest capitulations of all time, with Newcastle 5, Spurs 1. And you can see the sort of toxicity surrounding England players and the pressure that's on them, and the ill feeling that they've had and how that's affected their game. But in this game, they stuck it out when it got tough and they kept going and they got that winner. So I think that's probably the biggest positive.
They did keep going, and I think that was... The exciting thing for me was that they didn't change their style. So they didn't resort to just playing aimless long balls forward. They still kept trying to play the style of football that Southgate's encouraged almost since day one of his tenure. And it's slightly Spursy in a way. I would say slightly more direct than the way Spurs play. We don't try and play so many through balls on the edge of the box. We try and get crosses in a bit earlier for Kane. From my perspective, it worked really well, and the fact that we created so many chances excites me more than, you know, I'm not concerned about the fact that we only won 2-1 and only won via a last-minute goal, because we naturally created chances in open play. But the other main point of note is our set pieces, which were terrific. Michael Cox had written a piece pre-World Cup, and he'd said basically that Trippier and Young are in the squad slash team because of their virtue and set pieces. And I'd kind of thought, well, I'm not sure how true that is. You know, you don't tend to pick players based purely on set piece ability. Trippier's set pieces last night were sensational. He created five chances from corners and free kicks. I mean, we'll talk more about Trippier generally, because I want to apologise to him, his parents, his friends, Burnley Football Club. But I was so impressed with how we attacked set pieces, the way the ball was delivered. And also, I'd like to give a mini shout-out to Jordan Henderson, who I thought was a bit of a linchpin in our midfield. His forward passing at times was terrific. He still has a nasty habit of needlessly chipping balls at players, which makes it difficult for them to control. But, you know, some of his first-time passes forward, often over the top or sweeping them out wide, were really impressive. And I thought, you know, that was a... He fully justified his start over Dyer in that anchor role.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think he did have sort of a nervy patch, but as you say, he had also, to counter that, he had a few first-time balls over the top that were fantastic and created the early chances.
So we haven't got Bardi with us today, but he wanted to get his oar in, as he does, and he said, "For all of England's promise of attacking and risk-free football, are you concerned that both goals came from set pieces?"
I am not. I would be if Spurs were struggling to score but getting through with set pieces, because I don't believe we put a lot of time into them. But with England, there's a clear series of set plays put into action, and those, unlike just sort of random set piece goals that you get at Tottenham from time to time, those are repeatable. Those you can rely on. Those will come again, because you look at pretty much every corner, every free kick, almost every single one of them was going to Maguire, was going to the far post where Maguire was, for him to then head back across for a second ball. And it yielded results repeatedly. So, if that's our only one set play and we carry on like that deep into the tournament, well, teams will start doubling up on Maguire and they'll start doubling up on the far post. But if we have more than one play that we're going to take with us throughout the tournament, then I think that's a very positive, and we can go all the way with set pieces.
I totally agree with that. And also, just to further wind Bardi up, I'm going to throw in some XG. So Michael Cayley's expected goals model had England at 2.4 at half-time and 3.1 at full-time, which, I mean, the eye test tells you similar, really. Lingard, in particular, missed some big, big chances. His first one, which he basically put into the middle of the net, which he could have easily swept into the corner, was the one for me. But there are other good chances as well. John Stones missed a really presentable opportunity. I just thought England played some nice football in general. Their one or two touch stuff in the first 20 minutes was fantastic, and they were cutting Tunisia apart with relative ease, and we could have been two or three clear. So I'm not overly concerned about the fact that we were ultimately reliant on set pieces, because I think the performance in general was good. I just want to also comment on Southgate's use of substitutes, which I thought was just about spot on. I think Ashley Young probably should have come off for Rose, probably around the 70-minute mark. I mean, I would have started Rose, but that's kind of beside the point. I liked what Southgate did. I thought all the subs had an impact, particularly Loftus-Cheek, who was driving from deep and getting forward down that right-hand side. So that's encouraging as well. And we did mention in the last podcast that England have some nice options from the bench that give something different to the starting 11, which is something we've not really seen in recent England tournament squads. Okay, let's talk about Kieran Trippier. So Ryan Blackman, rblackman24 on Twitter, said, "Not a question, but I'd love to hear your takes on the Walker-Trippier dynamic." Nathan, you go first.
So we often complain about Trippier's lack of sort of explosiveness, his lack of pace, he doesn't take his man on very much. And I think that his success for England, his current ongoing success for England, sort of highlights the difference in international and club football, but also the different setups between England and Spurs, in that England are getting their width, getting their energy from their central midfielders, who are playing very attacking roles. We use the wing back to attract the opposition winger, and then the central midfielder makes sort of an outwards run between the opposition fullback and winger, and we play an early ball over the top, and that is something that Trippier has always been fantastic at. It's a really, really, and that matches well for Young as well, who's not as pacey as he was. Now he's 32 years old. So yeah, that was a fantastic use of the fullbacks and also the central midfielders we have available.
I was really critical in our first World Cup special of the fact that Trippier was potentially going to play right wing back with Walker, one of the best right wing backs in the world, behind him. But actually, the problems were with Walker in this match and not with Trippier. Trippier was probably our best player, dare I say. And I feel like I can't really delight in that, because I've previously called for him to not even be in the squad, let alone the starting 11. So it feels wrong for me to now be enjoying his performance. But he was great. I mean, like I said before, I think England's play a slightly different style to Spurs. And like you've touched on there, I think that benefits Trippier. And maybe Southgate's playing that style in a sense because he wants Trippier as a right wing back. I did feel there was a case in the last 20 minutes for switching him and Walker. Walker was under no pressure at the back, and I felt like Trippier's passing from the back could have been useful, whereas Walker made a couple of really exciting bursts on the right in those last few minutes, which made me kind of think what could have been. And I would have liked to have seen him running up the wing against tired legs, given that he probably conserved a fair amount of energy during the match. And I think there's scope there for doing some mid-game switches. But on the whole, Trippier was great. He used the ball really intelligently. He did lose it a fair few times with some of his passing, but it almost didn't matter because England won the ball back so quickly. Yeah, really, really, really liked Trippier's performance. Very encouraged about what's to come there. And I was totally and utterly wrong on on the question of who should start. Let's talk about what didn't go so well. I mean, there are plenty of positives. I would say a few negatives, and I'll start off by saying, you know, Lingard's wastefulness. I feel like Lingard is probably one of the weaker links in the team, actually. I like a lot of what he does. He makes some very good third man runs, but he can be incredibly wasteful, and you almost can't afford to be as wasteful as he was in international football. Did you have any thoughts on Lingard, or indeed Dele Alli?
Yeah, they both sort of had... I mean, Dele sort of got injured, didn't he? And he slowed down, and then he sort of moves into very much a forward role, into a very sort of Spurs Dele Alli role, where he was just making runs off the ball and trying to get in the box and link things together up there. I don't want to be too critical of Lingard. I think there's Ruben Loftus-Cheek hovering just over his shoulder. But you wouldn't want to sort of throw him out after a single game either. So there might be an opportunity for rotation and look at it that way. I'm not unhappy with Lingard. He's probably not in our top 11 players, but that doesn't make him an inappropriate pick for the first 11.
Yeah, sure. No, I completely agree with that. Dele seemed to pick up a thigh injury. It was unclear whether it was a slight strain or whether he'd just got a dead leg, but he seemed to pull up after no contact, so you kind of thought it was a strain. I mean, I assumed immediately that he'd be coming off, and I think Delph went to warm up and it looked like he was going to come on for him, and then Dele signalled that he was okay. If he doesn't start the next game, would you be looking at Loftus-Cheek as a kind of natural replacement there?
Yeah, it was slightly curious that it was Delph who went to warm up initially. I think Southgate sees Delph and Dele as left-sided midfielders and sees Lingard and Ruben Loftus-Cheek as right-sided midfielders, but I don't know, that seems quite overly static, so I'm not sure.
The other thing I kind of wanted to touch upon was, in my opinion, something that we need to be wary of, which is the left side of our defence, where we have Harry Maguire and Ashley Young. So I think Harry Maguire is not ideally suited to playing on the left of a back three. And that's because there's a technical issue in his game where he's so right-footed and almost unable to let the ball run across his body onto his left foot and take it on his left. When you see someone like Toby Alderweireld, who's equally right-footed, play on the left, he's happy to let the ball run across him and to clear the ball with his left foot, which keeps attacking players guessing. Maguire, on the other hand, is very predictable, wants to cut in every time, and we saw twice last night that he's liable to cut in and then play some reckless passes across his own penalty area. With Young on his outside, that is a problem because Young wants to do exactly the same,
yeah.
And England become very easy to box in. Whereas where Rose on that left side, I think Maguire's technical issue can be less exposed. So I think that's something to watch. I do actually think Rose will come in for Young in the next match. I thought Young was probably our poorest player. And the effort level is always there with Young. He's not a player I'd warm to. I think he's a bit of a shithouse. He's not a particularly nice guy on the pitch, and his style is not for me. But the effort levels are there, and he's a good man marker. But I think Rose adds so much extra dynamism there, even if he's not fully on form. And that, coupled with the fact that Maguire's so one-footed, means for me that Rose should start the next game. Interested in if you have any thoughts on that, Nathan?
I take all your points on Rose. Obviously, we don't know obviously he's been sort of fairly public about his issues in the last year, and we don't know what sort of place he's in. But yeah, I take your reasoning there. Also, I've been someone to to play down Maguire's links to Spurs, which Spurs fans like to recommend. And I haven't changed my mind on that, but I was very impressed with Maguire's game overall. I accept that there are a couple of issues, especially early on with his right-footedness, but he carried the ball forward a lot, and obviously he was brilliant from set pieces.
Yeah, I mean, the way he attacks the ball is like a magnet for the ball at set pieces. He's a tall guy, we know that, but he's also really broad and strong, and he seems to dominate everything. Also, you know, twinkle toe runs forward. We've seen Maguire do that all season, and he's very capable. And then that was a joy to see him charge forward and make up the numbers in midfield at times. I'm fully behind Maguire being part of the team. I'm just not sure that him and Young on the left is quite right. Just one final point in our back three. I thought John Stones had a quietly excellent game. Very calm, composed, an excellent presence. I saw him a few times marshalling the offside trap. I'm a big fan of Stones, unapologetically, and I think the way he played last night was incredibly encouraging, particularly given he's not played consistently this season. He's often found himself out of the Man City team. So to come in and look so commanding was impressive.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
We had a question from Aaron B. Rowell, who says, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much is it coming home? Nathan, you were very confident in our first World Cup pod. Are you still feeling confident?
Yeah, on a scale of 1 to 10, it's 1966.
Nice. I mean, that's pretty definite. Let's move on from there and talk about what's happened in the other first group matches so far. It's generally been the case that the big teams have disappointed. Do you have a feeling for why that might be?
Only that the general trend of international football is for a general parity and chaos because of the effectiveness of the low block, which comes from the lack of ability for international teams to create proactive possession styles, which comes from the lack of time available with the team for coaches and the lack of playing time with all the members of the national squads, and the general lower quality of coaches at the international level.
I totally agree with that. I think that's a really salient point and something that is often forgotten. You know, these players aren't training together every week. It's very difficult to build up a system. And so typically, and this is you know, a huge sweeping judgment, but typically teams that haven't changed much over the past X years tend to do better at tournaments. However, to counter that, Germany's team has not changed very much, and they were one of the biggest disappointment in that first round of matches. I was slightly shocked by Germany's poor showing. I guess they've got a lot of ageing players in their team, and in a sense, the exclusion of Sadio Mane is the cherry on top of that. They've opted for
what? Sane, not Mane.
Sorry, why did I say that?
Yeah, they've aged a lot in midfield, especially it's Kroos and Khedira who are now into their sort of early to mid-30s, and it's really showing in midfield for them, isn't it?
Kroos was an interesting one because he was marked, almost man-marked by Carlos Vela, he did a really impressive job. I was really impressed with Vela, who's a player that I've never thought much of at all. Basically did a man-to-man job on Kroos when Mexico didn't have the ball, and that worked really effectively. But Germany's midfield was way too high up the pitch. I don't know what was going on there. The gap between their defence and midfield was enormous, and it meant that their defence was constantly committing themselves in very dangerous areas, which is problematic. I mean, of the big teams, the only one that I actually thought looked good was Spain. And obviously they drew 3-3, they made some key individual errors. But I thought overall, they were good. I thought Diego Costa was impressive, but I thought Isco was the main man. He looked really impressive. And I kind of see Spain's managerial change not impacting as much as many thought it might. And I still think they, for me, I still think they're the eventual winners. What do you think of Spain?
Yeah, I pretty much echo that. They're still Spain. They're not quite at their height. They don't have Xavi, but they're still very good. They just got Ronaldo'd.
They totally got Ronaldo'd. I mean, he was his usual talismanic self, and that free kick was outrageous. On the flip side of the big team struggling, we've seen some really promising performances from some of the slightly lesser teams, particularly Mexico, who I was incredibly impressed with. They were very organised, and, you know, dare I say, one of my least favourite players, Javier Hernandez, had an excellent game leading Milan, I thought. But also Portugal, who Bardi tipped in the first podcast, very impressive. Portugal was a unit. I thought Iran looked good against Morocco, and I thought Sweden were also interesting to watch and very solid. Obviously very direct, which is a unattractive style generally, but you can't, the World Cup benefits from having different stylistic matches. And they were a fascinating team to watch because they were almost Allardyce-esque in their approach, which actually worked really well for them. Yeah. Are there any performances that caught your eye?
No, I think you've hit them already. I found that game to be a particularly hard watch myself. I struggled with that one, but that's sort of after, what is it, 4 or 5 days of several games a day.
Yeah.
That's why.
The other one of interest to me was Russia beating Saudi Arabia 5-0 despite having 39% possession, which just almost tells you everything you need to know about the World Cup so far. It's not about how much you have the ball, it's about the effectiveness of what you do when you do have it. I didn't think Russia were overly impressive, actually, overall. 5-0 flattered them, but Saudi's centre-backs were just about the worst centre-backs I've seen in any international match. They were both horrendous. And I've got to say, Denis, is it Cheryshev, the Villarreal winger who came on for Zhigoev, scored 2 absolutely brilliant goals for Russia and was probably their best player despite being a sub. I didn't think Russia were going to be much cop, and I still don't think they're going to be a winner, but I think they might. I'm fairly confident they'll qualify from their group now, and I'm interested to see what happens there. The other thing of note to me, sorry, Nath, was the I mean, in the last couple of years, we've seen, certainly the Premier League, a switch to back threes and then back to back fours. And so far, it's very much been back four is the order of the day. Fewer teams have played a back three. And I'm wondering if the back three formation perhaps has fully gone out of fashion now. Obviously, England are one of the few teams to go with a back three. Any thoughts on that at all?
We saw South Korea switch to a back three. We did also, just to go back a bit, see Tunisia switch to a back three or maybe a back five for defensive reasons. And I think that we might see more of that specifically against England. And this is something I've written about before, but because England are trying to play a sort of positional play model, vaguely, that is about separating the pitch into these 5 individual columns and attacking all 5 columns at the same time, the natural response to that is to simply put a man in each column so that you don't create an overload anywhere. So I think we might see more teams set up against England in a back five.
Yeah, I think that probably is quite an effective method for shackling England. We've got a couple of questions in. Firstly, John and lots of numbers on Twitter said, we've seen most teams now. Where does England's performance rank?
Probably only behind Mexico.
Wow, high praise. And what's your rationale for that?
Well, the other high-ranked teams haven't performed particularly well. And like you, I was very impressed with Mexico.
Mexico seemed a well-oiled machine. They were very well-drilled, very organised, very difficult to play against. England were almost the opposite of that. They had fluidity and freedom, and there was structure there, but it allowed some of our key players to shine. The one who didn't shine was Sterling. I think there's lots more to come from Sterling. I'm very excited about what he can achieve in this World Cup. So it's quite nice in a way that England haven't played at their full potential yet, because clearly Sterling can do more. I think Dele Alli and Lingard can do more. I would probably say, I mean, it's difficult to disagree that. I'd say Spain, for me, were more impressive. When Brazil looked good in their patches where they did look good, they were more impressive. But over the course of the match, they disappointed. But yeah, it's difficult to argue with us being second or third. We'll talk about Belgium as well, because they're in our group. I don't know if you caught the Panama-Belgium match, which, I mean, ended up as a bit of a thrashing, but on the way the match went, that didn't feel like a fair reflection. I thought Panama missed crucial chances at key points, where Belgium looked a bit flaky, and certainly defensively they didn't look quite right to me. And also they were very reliant on their opening goal being an absolute worldie from Mertens. Did you catch that game?
Yeah, I made a video on it at half-time. I managed to sort of screen record some of the overhead tactical cam and made a very quick, very rough video pointing out a couple of Belgium's issues in possession. But my internet is terrible, so by the time the video uploaded, they were 3-0 up.
But I think, you know, as I've just said, I sort of agree. I think your point stands. They basically went back and forth across the defence constantly because they couldn't get anyone on the ball in midfield. It was crying out for Dembele to come on in there. I'm not sure about Witsel. I've never been sure on Witsel. And I certainly don't think De Bruyne as a deep line playmaker is the way forward for Belgium. They need to get him on the ball a little higher, and Dembele would allow them that. Martinez has not got that team set up right at all, but they have got such good players in attacking areas that they can rely on those moments of quality as they ended up with. And I've got to say, their second and third goals were great, to be fair to them. So yeah, good goals from Belgium, but not a cohesive 90-minute good performance. Next question was from Andy Perry 79, who said, does Kane fill a different role as a nine for England than he does for Spurs? He didn't seem very mobile tonight, although his hold-up play and layoff play were exemplary. He seems more dynamic for Spurs in the central role. Any thoughts on that, Nath?
Yeah, he definitely sort of plays as a more traditional number nine for England. I think that makes sense tactically because you want to sort of lean to basics more and know that you're going to have a man in there rather than just give players total freedom to express themselves. But there's also a possibility that he's still carrying that injury a little bit, still struggling for fitness a tiny bit.
I sort of felt like that as well. I mean, basically, in the second half, I thought he looked a bit lethargic. He didn't do his usual hold up play out on the wing as effectively as he does for Spurs. I agree, though, that his role again is different for England, and I think it goes back to the point I made earlier where I sort of said that they put the ball in the box more early, and if Kane's not there to get on the end of it, there's no point doing that. So I think he's encouraged to stay on the shoulder more, whereas for Spurs we see him drop deep, link play, and players run beyond him. Southgate seems to favour the ball going out wide and then the ball going into the box a bit earlier. And that's not to say it's constantly direct or a long ball style. It's not at all. We try and use the ball from sensible areas, and Trippier in particular was very high up the pitch on numerous occasions, but certainly when the ball goes out to Trippier, he wants the ball delivered, and that's absolutely fair enough. Also, we have a question from Spurs Statman, who said, would you rather Kane scored the winner in the World Cup final or in an Aguero type scenario for Spurs?
I mean, I'd take either, but club before country, of course.
I am 100% club before country and would agree. I thought of an interesting twist in this question, though. Do you think Kane would rather score the winner in the World Cup final or an Aguero-type scenario for Spurs?
That's a tough one. I
think he'd go World Cup, you know.
Yeah, I think he might lean that way. The bigger stage.
The bigger stage, it would forever go down in national football history, whereas, you know, a winning goal for Spurs to win the league would only go down in Spurs history as such. I think Kane genuinely does have affection for Spurs and us as fans, but ultimately he's a very driven man and he has a lot of ambition in his career, and to score the winner in the World Cup final would just be insane. So I think he'd go with that.
If it's secured in the Golden Boot, then definitely.
Oh, yeah. Do you think he has a chance of the Golden Boot?
I do.
I think so as well. I'm excited. I think having that as a target for him can only make us better.
Definitely.
Is there anything you wanted to add at all on the first round of matches that we've not spoken about?
No, I think that's it.
We've covered a fair bit there. And we're going to get back together after the next England game and basically do the same thing again. Hopefully by then we'll have some solid Spurs transfer info to talk about as well. It's been very quiet on that front so far, which is, I must say, slightly worrying. But yeah, thanks for your time, Nath. It's been good fun. I've enjoyed talking about England's 2-1 win, and let's hope that we win the next game as well. I think, given Panama's sort of slight recklessness with the ball, I think there's every chance we'll win that one quite comfortably.
It's coming home.
It's coming home. Right, that's it. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back in a few days' time. It's the fighting. Clock. It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Clock. Oh, that was really interesting, mate, yeah.